Dr. Bob is here as our guest speaker on the Diabetes Chat. Dr. Bob is the Chief Science and Medical Officer at the American Diabetes Association. He has done lots of research in the attempts to improve the lives of those living with diabetes. He has been a Harvard professor and worked as a senior vice president at Joslin Diabetes Center, working with over 25,000 patients. He is world-renowned, getting recognition through his leadership roles and for all the work he has done internationally. And tonight, it's amazing to have Dr. Bob here, and we're really looking forward to chatting to him. So welcome, Dr. Bob.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here and look forward to a good conversation with you all.
Thank you so much. So what we'll do this evening is myself, Tom, Morgan, and Chris are on the panel, and we've got some questions that we've got for you this evening. And Norman's on the panel at the minute, and then anyone else that wants to join can request to speak, or they can send some questions through, and we can hopefully get a bit of conversation going. I know we've got about 45 minutes, I believe, now, because I know you've got another conference this evening, haven't you?
Unfortunately, yes. So we'll all do this efficiently.
Absolutely, and I'm sure anything that we don't get covered tonight, we can catch up in the upcoming months, can't we?
Sounds good.
Brilliant. So what we'll do, we'll head over to Morgan, and she's going to set us off.
Hello. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. I'm very excited.
Thanks, Morgan. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So my section this evening is kind of your background into diabetes care and kind of where it all began. I know we really want to get to like stuff with the ADA and your research and all that. So I guess we'll keep this section a little short to contain time. But what I really want to know is like, what got you working into this profession? What made you decide you wanted to work in diabetes research and improving lives of diabetics?
Wow. Okay. Well, it started quite a while ago. I was a research grad student, a PhD student, and looking for projects. And at the time, they didn't really know, this was in the biochemistry world, they didn't really know that when insulin went to a cell and had its action, what happened once it bound to the cell? And that was an intriguing scientific question, and I sort of got into it. And lo and behold, I began to realize in the somewhat myopic way that scientists can be sometimes, I was deep into the project, and then I realized, oh, this actually relates to this disease that affects millions, hundreds of millions of people around the world. Oh, how wonderful. Like solving this can be hugely beneficial for all sorts of people. And so that began the journey. And what I would say about my journey in the world of diabetes activities has been that it really, because of the disease, the people that have it, the challenges they live, the scientific questions that it brings up, the public health issues it brings up, it's led me in so many different directions that I've learned so much about a lot of other fields from being in the diabetes world. And so as an example, for a number of years, I got very involved in a lot of research around what helps people change their behavior. And it's not something I was trained in. I'm not a psychologist or anything like that. But it became clear if I wanted to help my patients with diabetes, I needed to understand what we know about how to help people change their behavior. Because as you know, so much of diabetes is what people do every day. As healthcare providers, we can provide guidance, but it's the people with diabetes that live it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really impressive. Get myself back into my notes. I was getting a little ahead of myself. So what was, like, you kind of talked a little bit about, like, what got you into it, like, the research experiences you were getting, but overall, like, what was the experience like during your education and kind of getting a foot in the door of life to what you're doing today, and, like, what were, like, the most challenging aspects of it?
Well, let's see. You know, I started with the science, and that grabbed me. And then I realized that I wanted ultimately, I'm condensing about, you know, a couple of decades of my life or something. I realized that I wanted to do something more impactful, but closer to affecting people. So, you know, basic science is really important, but the distance between a discovery there to actually impacting people is, you know, it's, you know, typically many years and many, many people involved. And so that was why I decided after finishing my PhD to go to medical school, because I wanted to impact people. And as a physician, I got to do that for a number of years, and I still see patients. But that drive for impact made me think about going broader. So I, at a certain point, I realized I can only see so many patients in my lifetime. And if I really want to have an impact, I need to think a bit broader, systems of care and how they can be changed. And then I had a wonderful opportunity to go to the Joslin Diabetes Center, which is the oldest and largest diabetes center in the world, and think there how that amazing organization could provide even better care. And then here at the American Diabetes Association, I get to think of how to do that at an even broader scale beyond one institution that takes care of 25,000 patients. How can we really impact the care of people with diabetes in the U.S. and around the world more broadly?
Yeah, that's incredible. Moving from, you know, that, like, micro level into the macro, trying to make, like, I guess in a way, systemic change and improvement. How long were you at the Joslin Diabetes Center?
About 8 years. And it was a fantastic place. And I still actually see patients a half day a week there. So one of the things that I was able to do in joining the American Diabetes Association is hold on.
Correct.
Yeah, I still hold on to that role as well in teaching and research projects and other sorts of things. I'm a little bit of an ADD person, so I like to do a lot of different things, and it makes for a busy day, but it's also a fun day.
I was gonna say that must keep your work weeks very busy.
It does, but you know, it's I love it. I love it. My role at Joslin was fantastic, and here at the American Diabetes Association, even better. Work with extraordinary people, and we work together to try to have the maximal impact on the most people possible. So it's very rewarding.
It sounds like a really, really interesting, rewarding career and experience, and very admirable. Before you worked in this area, and even now, did you have anybody close to you that had diabetes themselves, like friends, colleagues, family?
Yeah, interestingly, not so much. At least that wasn't a driver, you know, along the journey over these years. Certainly, I have gotten to know, had some less close family members and a number of friends. What is interesting, and this is one of the nice things I've, you know, having been in the field now for quite a while, I've had patients that I saw when they were much younger that decided that they were driven to also have an impact. They had type 1 diabetes and they went into healthcare and went into medicine and either became physicians focused on diabetes or physician assistants or, you know, various different roles. So it's that's really rewarding to see as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm sure that's really like kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Inspiring to see like the patients you're working with now taking over roles like yours themselves and just kind of being there and being more active in trying to improve those lives. That's incredible.
Yeah, you know, I think also for me, another thing that drives me is really around, in a sense, bringing the next generation in and mentoring people. I was very lucky to have some extraordinary mentors that helped guide me through my career. And although I certainly pay homage to them, some of them aren't even around anymore. And so the way to do it is to pass it forward.
Absolutely. I know I have some mentors in my field that have made such a difference to me, and I intend to do the same thing. And I think that I'm sure you're also a mentor to so many others who are going to do the exact same thing as well.
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful cycle that we can all do in our own ways. And so, yes, it is very rewarding. And, I just, you know, on Friday I was giving grand rounds somewhere, and one of the physicians, junior physicians, reached out to me and said, you know, do you have a few minutes afterwards to chat? And we did, and wow, extraordinary young person doing some really great things. And I was able to, you know, oh, do you know about this? Let me connect you with these people, you know, help them along the way. And it's lovely.
That is incredible. And I know it was a little bit short, but that was an incredible beginning to the interview. And I'm going to pass it off to Tom for a section I'm fairly excited about your work with the American Diabetes Association.
Great.
Hi, Dr. Bob.
Hey, hello there.
Hey, so obviously that's amazing, you talking about your background and where you've got to where you are now. Could you maybe tell us a little bit about what the American Diabetes Association is and how long you've been working within the association, and what brought you to the association, and kind of what your position is as Chief Science and Medical Officer? I know there's a lot of questions there, but I can always go through it.
Tom, you threw a lot there. I'll try to.
I know, man.
You may have to do a follow-up question or two. I may not get it to all of those things. So, you know, the American Diabetes Association, it's been around for some 82 years, is really committed to improving the lives of people with diabetes and finding a cure. And although it is the American Diabetes Association, we really do have a global footprint in a lot of different ways. And we do a lot of stuff. If I were to sort of say sort of the big areas, we are the go-to source for information for both people with diabetes and health professionals and researchers. So we have the largest diabetes meeting in the world that'll be happening in less than a month in New Orleans. First time that we're all going to be present in person since the pandemic. So we're very excited about that. We develop the clinical guidelines that are used by healthcare providers around the world. We had 4 million downloads last year. We do this on a yearly basis. We update it every year. We fund research to, again, driven to improve the lives of people with diabetes. And we also are very active in advocacy in a variety of different areas, more in the U.S. And, you know, anything from ensuring that people have access to the treatments that they need, which is a challenge here in the U.S., but is honestly a challenge globally. So that's a little bit of a taste of some of the things that we do. And then I guess I started 2 years ago, and what brought me here was, I really enjoyed my role as chief medical officer at the Joslin Diabetes Center. As I said, you know, like, that's the dream job for someone like me. It's, you know, the oldest and largest diabetes center in the world, and helping to lead that, you know, incredible group of people forward. And I guess for me, driven by impact, the only job that one that I could think of that would have an even greater impact would be the role that I have here at the American Diabetes Association. And so when that opportunity availed itself, I was all in, and it's been an incredible experience for the last 2 years.
Absolutely. And what you do as part of your role? I guess you go to many different committees and conferences around the world. I know you've attended the ATTD conference recently, which I bet was just amazing, and especially after the pandemic and not being able to go to such events. What sort of other things do you do? And you've already mentioned sort of like mentoring and working with younger doctors and so it's just a little bit more about what does your role entail?
Sure. I would say a variety of things, and to what we were talking about earlier with Morgan, I do like variety, so it's a variety of things. In essence, I oversee our research program that funds research, and so there's a whole process there to identify the what will we fund and what are the best science and areas that we want to make our investment. The activities that look to guide healthcare providers on how they can do a better job and get better results for their people with diabetes. And so that is how to make that happen. And so a lot of work around that, the creation of these guidelines that I described that are sort of the gold standard for how care should be. And then reviewing materials that go out to people with diabetes and make sure they're accurate and provide helpful guidance on a whole variety of issues that come up that relate to medicine, healthcare, and science.
Absolutely. And what I find very interesting as well is how you connect with the diabetes community on Twitter and through different social media platforms, Facebook, and you do different sort of events or virtual events like Ask Dr. Bob, where you're talking about a specific subject and then people are engaging and interacting with you. And I just think that's super cool, that having someone of your sort of experience and expertise and being able to kind of talk to the community. I think that's just amazing. And I bet it's such a great experience for you as well, being able to talk to people. Like, I'm sure the majority of listeners here today have diabetes or have a connection with diabetes, isn't it? So I bet it's really nice, isn't
yeah,
it? Being able to connect with the community.
It really is. And I've been exploring these different mediums, like Twitter and the program that I do, Ask Dr. Bob, that we do each month. It's really rewarding. What I didn't appreciate is how extensive a reach one can have by using these things. You know, again, getting back to the can only see so many patients one-on-one and help guide them, but to be able to interact with hundreds and thousands of people is very rewarding.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we've had different guest speakers come on from different backgrounds, we've had healthcare professionals, nurses that have come on, and we've talked about that. As a person with diabetes, you may only see a doctor or a consultant maybe once a year, or, you know what I mean, for like 10, 15 right. minutes. So having these opportunities to connect with events and audiences and these sort of virtual programs, you know what I mean? It's amazing. Even if you're not actually asking the questions or interacting, but just listening, and actually you take away something and you feel part of it, because as we've mentioned previously on our chats, having diabetes can be quite lonely, isn't it? And you feel you may not get that support. And just having this sort of these ways, you can actually connect with people, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. And Tom, I appreciate what you do in spreading the word and getting information out. And and we cross borders. We reach out to everybody with on this kind of program. So it's a wonderful opportunity.
Thank you so much. And I guess you do a lot of work with all types of diabetes. Is that correct? So it's not just type 1, but type 2 and other types.
Is that really right? It's the wonderful thing about the American Diabetes Association is that the focus really is on all people with diabetes and their loved ones. And so all types of diabetes, all ages, and everyone needs something different. So
just think that's amazing, honestly. And I think that kind of leads us on to a little bit about the diabetes camps that the American Diabetes Association do. I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about the diabetes camps and what it is, and have you been part of it in any capacity? Have you been to any of the camps themselves, or do you do much work with that?
Yeah, well, camp is really this extraordinary thing for kids with diabetes. As you said, Tom, there's so many people with diabetes that are isolated, that are not connected to others. And, I think that's even more true sometimes for kids. Kids want to fit in, and there's certain aspects of them having diabetes that makes it harder for them to do so. And them coming to a camp where, first of all the campers have diabetes, most all of the counselors do as well, and go through their daily routines and see that everybody else is doing the same thing. And the same things that they struggle with, everyone else does as well. And the joking around about it and just being goofy and everything is just the relationships that develop out of those few days or week that they are at camp. I've seen many of them and heard many people talk about how not only did it make such a big difference for them at the time, but that they've developed lifelong friendships as a result of those experiences. And that's allowed them to follow the journey of diabetes, because again, diabetes when you're 8, as you can all appreciate, is different than when you're 18 and different when you're 28. And, it's so having those diabetes companions through life is so important.
Absolutely. I think that just sums it up beautifully. And just like being part of these sort of camps kind of normalizes life, yes. Isn't it? I can imagine.
Yes.
I was 16, 17 when I was diagnosed, and I don't think I would have been ready for these such things, but if I was able to go to these such events and be around other people, children of my age or just adults, and like having them as role models. I did Camp America for 3 summers, and I worked at a just a normal camp in Connecticut, and it was the best thing ever. Like you said, Dr. Bob, making friends, making memories,
yeah.
And it's shaped me of where I am today in being a teacher. It really led me on to become where I am now, and I can just imagine a diabetes camp and kind of being around other people going through the same thing. Wow, it must be totally just insane. And like, it just must be the best experience ever. And earlier in the week, I sent a Twitter poll out asking the community if they know anyone or have they been to camp, a diabetes camp before, or any sort of diabetes events. And we've had a few people tweeting. I'll read a couple.
Oh, thank you.
If that's okay. I met a friend, a type 1 friend at camp, and we're still friends now, which is amazing. I attended a BDA camp, which is now the Diabetes UK, in 1977, and that was from David. And then we had a couple of people talking about that. We've had Ben says he was a participant and then a mentor for 10 years.
Oh, nice.
And I just think that's absolutely inspirational. We had Lauren said, I did camp in the early 2000s and still remember the places and the memories. Mrs. W says, yes, as a volunteer and now a staff member, which is absolutely incredible. And then Ash says, I did it for 14 years, 7 as a camper, 7 as a staff. And they're just a couple of the comments.
Oh.
We've got quite a few there. And I just wanted to share that with you.
Thank you.
It just amazes us. So yeah,
it really touches deep. It really touches deep for people. It's and you know, not only for the campers, which you gave a number of great stories, but also for the parents, because they get a chance to just relax a little bit, because it's, you know, there's a lot of worry in being a parent of a child with diabetes, and so knowing that they're in good hands and being able to share stories with other parents also is helpful. So yeah, it's good all the way around.
It's absolutely priceless. So is the camps for kids and parents? So do they kind of go together as a family?
They go together, and then there's some still engagement with the parents, but it's you know, it's all designed for the kids. And so, you know, the first time, you know, it's like, okay, we're going to eat, and it's time to start carb counting and thinking about, you know, what we're eating and all that. And, well, you know, the look in the kids' eyes of, oh, we're all doing this together. and my cool counselor is doing it also. And they're, you know, they're pulling out their pump, and, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, no. Well, let me look at your CGM. Oh, I got this, you know. Yeah, it's just so sweet.
That's just ace, and that just normalizes it. And I've said it so many times on our chats that it took me a good 16 years to get to the confidence I am now. I'm still very nervous around going out and getting my injection pen out or whatnot. That's just amazing, just being around other people. And I attended one event in London a couple of months ago, and just being around other people in the room, there was over 100 type 1s, and it was just the most – it was the most insane thing. And then afterwards, we went for a few drinks and some food, and we're all kind of carb counting, or some of us are getting our pumps out or pens out or whatever.
Yep.
Or even when we were in the events hall listening to the amazing guest speakers, there was people's pumps going off, and it was just normal.
Yeah, no big deal.
And you know what I mean. So yeah, it's great. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's absolutely amazing. And I really wish I would have known about diabetes camps way back in 2012 when I was a young college uni student, because as much as I loved my camp, I would have definitely tried to hook up. And who knows, in the future, that if we're ever in the States, if we're allowed to, I'd love to come have a look, because I could just imagine it's just the best thing ever.
Yeah, it really. I mean, you know, like you say, camp in general for kids is this wonderful thing. You know, like and they develop such great relationships and everything else, and then you layer on the diabetes piece, where you've now really normalized things, build their confidence and being able to do things on their own that maybe, you know, sometimes parents, you know, all well-meaning, are so involved in their child's diabetes care that they don't give the child, depending on their age, enough room to sort of do their own thing and learn on their own, which is ultimately what has to happen.
Of course.
And part of that is why, you know, if you one of the interesting things, if you look at different ages, and this is a study that was done in the US, and look at A1C levels across different ages, your audience might be curious, who has the highest A1Cs? What age group? And it's
interesting.
It's 18 to 24. And it's sort of, you know, those kids that often had their parents really manage their diabetes in large part.
Yes.
And now they have to do it on their own. And, you know, everyone's a little crazier in that age group when you get out of the home and, you know, you start doing all sorts of stuff. So you layer diabetes on top of that, and it's challenging, which is why that's a group we really have to reach out to and do better.
Yes. Yeah, exactly, isn't it? It's connecting people, educating people, and bringing them together. So what are the ages for people to participate in camp? Is it 5 to 18?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Yes.
And is the diabetes camps for adults, or is that something that hopefully in the future ADA would be interested in doing? Because I know there's a couple of people on the poll question actually said, would there be any camps for adults growing up?
Interesting. You know, we don't have camps for adults. But it could be an interesting thing to think about. Whether it would be a camp or some other way of really fundamentally connecting people, because I think that's part of the magic is connecting people. There's a lot of research supporting something that your listeners know intuitively, is that, you know, hearing something from a healthcare provider is one thing, but hearing it from a peer is in many ways more effective. And that peer support piece really makes a difference.
Of course it does, yeah. And we've spoke about that, and we're truly grateful for the fantastic professionals out there who can give us the guidance and support. But we kind of say in ourselves that we're the experts in ourselves, because we're the ones living with it day in, day out, and connecting with other people and like sharing them sort of experiences is just priceless, isn't it? As much as we love the support we get from like yourself and other people, living through it with something like with another type 1 diabetic, it's just great.
Yeah, well, and you know, there's a you have a legitimacy when you speak to each other, because you're walking the walk, right? It's easy for somebody to say, you know, we joke that let's say someone that has to lose weight, if they're getting advice from someone that's really thin, they're like, you know, yeah, it's easy for you.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah, 100%. Honestly, thank you. Go on, Domen.
Sorry, there's a bit of lag there. Do you have any staff that have type 1 diabetes as in part of the American Diabetes Association?
Quite a lot. Yes, quite a lot. I would say one of the things that really powers our organization is the passion that people bring from either they having diabetes or a loved one. And I would say Wow, huge numbers. From sort of my right hand person is in the diabetes world in general. So we have quite a number of people with diabetes, and it is helpful, right? I mean, there's some of the internal voice of people with diabetes, and then we look to seek out others in the community to help guide us in the work that we do.
That's awesome to hear. We were talking last week with Tom about how it's nice when you've got health professionals as well that also have type 1 diabetes, the whole experts thing is just mentioned.
Yes, yes. And there are a number, I have a number of colleagues, that I've met over the years with type 1, and either in the research role or as clinicians.
That's awesome to hear.
And as I said, I've even had the pleasure of having one of my patients become one of those people. Starting as a young adult and then following through. So yeah, it is beautiful.
It is, really is. Thank you so much for that section, Dr. Bob, especially talking about the diabetes camps. It's something I'm very passionate about, and we talked about it in our early weeks. I think we're on week 14, 15 now of the diabetes chat, and we talked about camps, and it was Chris that put me in the direction of
Hey, Dr. Bob.
Hey, howdy, Chris.
the first question I've got here ties in a little bit to your bio on the ADA website, where it says that your research primarily focuses on innovative models of diabetes care. And I'm wondering, I noticed I sort of do the news roundups periodically for our little chat. And I recall that you were actually quoted in an article about a new thing that Walmart has coming out, a new virtual care model. You want to sort of talk about how that ties in? Is that something that, sort of grew out of or along the same thought processes as the research that you're doing?
Yeah. So, thanks for asking about that. Two things that ADA is really interested in and is really important is, one, increasing access to good care for people with diabetes. And if we've learned one thing from the pandemic is that a lot of care, not necessarily all care, but a lot of care can be done virtually. And so that's part of what led us to partner with Walmart, because they're known as the low-cost option on all sorts of things. And so we're pleased to work with them and with a number of others on how to deliver care differently, because I've been interested in this virtual care or digital health for a few years now. And one of the things that we know is from the healthcare system sort of, world, is we may do a good job during the visit, and that doesn't always happen, but let's hope that we do. But where the current system does pretty poorly is between visits. So you see a healthcare provider, you get some good advice, you learn some things, make adjustments in medicine, whatever. And then, as Tom was saying, you may not be back for 6 months and all that time in between, there often isn't a lot of guidance. And so, particularly digital health solutions have the opportunity to reach out in real time at any time. And that's sort of what people with diabetes need. They need help when they need it, not necessarily the time they already have an appointment to see their provider.
And does that tie in sort of similarly to services like, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, OneDrop or Livongo that sort of do the telehealth thing with the connected meters?
Yeah, those are
real-time access.
Yes, those are other examples. There are a number of companies now that are doing this, and it's really filling a gap. You know, we're in the midst of really reimagining diabetes care in a lot of ways. So whether it's those kinds of digital health solutions or getting care at non-traditional places, pharmacies, other places in the community, all of that is really starting to evolve. And I think for the betterment of people with diabetes, to make care convenient, personalized, engaging. We certainly can do better, and it's a time of a lot of experimentation, which I really think is great.
That's somewhat of a problem over here as well. You're talking about kind of almost like instant help. Like if something's wrong, someone with diabetes typically kind of wants now. And sure, we can call, you know, our local sort of diabetes nurse. I mean, they're all sort of, most of them are like based at hospitals or health centers
right
over here. Yeah, actually getting through to someone is a rarity because, you know, they either got an appointment or they're doing office work and they're not there at the moment, or they're on call somewhere. So that's a bit of a problem over here as well.
Yeah, I think it's a universal problem. And so imagine how, you know, you probably have situations where you call for other services and somebody, there's a artificial intelligence driven sort of, they listen to your request and then they start providing you information. The same kind of thing can be happening for diabetes. So some of the questions require a live person, but some of them may not, and you can imagine AI-driven solutions that could answer those questions when you need. The answer.
How is the direction that things seem to be headed?
Yeah, I think it's a big shift in the way we assess blood glucose levels. And, you know, I would say for the vast majority of people that have used a CGM in the modern days, like, you know, because the older versions were not that great, it is a game changer. It provides so much more information and is just so valuable. And so one of the things that we're really working on is helping, you know, endocrinologists understand this, but the primary care world, where a lot of people with diabetes get their care, still don't have a good understanding of how to use that information and make adjustments. And the idea is, blood glucose levels are, but it doesn't necessarily give information about how you might make an adjustment. So let's say for someone with type 1 diabetes and their A1C is above where it would be ideal, well, it doesn't really help the clinician to know what to do. Whereas continuous glucose monitoring data, you look at the averages over 14 days and you can see, you know, which time of day tends to be the highest and therefore adjust the insulin, or, you know, it's just so much more information, not only for the clinician, but also for the person living with diabetes, where people really learn what affects their blood glucoses and how to make the right kinds of changes. It's a wonderful feedback.
Well, I know time might be
to the amazing conversations with people in person, finally, that will happen for the thousands that are there. That are helping to reduce the inequities in health that we have, that are targeting that effectively. There's just so much. There are literally 100 oral presentations and 100, I mean, not 100, I'm sorry, 1,000 oral presentations over the 5 days. And 1,000 posters. So there's just so much. It's going to be really exciting.
Is there anything you're currently working on that you have that you want to sort of plug or give a little peek into?
You know, there's a lot. I think one of the things that and you know, appreciate those that follow me on Twitter, you can, you know, sort of in real time-ish, hear about a lot of the exciting work that we're doing. You know, one of the things that we're doing is bringing the voice of people with diabetes infused into the work that we do. And whether that's thinking about our strategy on research or the kind of information we share, I think as healthcare providers, we too commonly decide what people need instead of asking people what they need. And so I'm excited to do more of that and in a variety of different ways. But there's just so much exciting happening in diabetes right now. I really think it's, you know, I've been in this world of diabetes for, you know, 30 plus years. And I really feel like this is the most exciting time right now. There's so much opportunity, so many new things going on. It's dizzying and it's invigorating.
Well, I know we've got to wrap up, but I wanted to say thank you for coming on and answering a few questions.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure. And thank you all for the work that you do and for all the people out there with diabetes. If we can help, you know, our website has a wealth of information. And I know it's not easy, but there are people to help. And so take care of yourselves. And thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to you all.
Thank you, Dr. Bob, for coming on today. It's been a real pleasure, and I feel like we've just touched the surface, really. And I'm sure we could talk more and more, and hopefully in the coming months ahead, we can hopefully set something up again. Because I'm sure by the reaction of people's emojis, that everyone's really enjoyed and really fascinated. So, hopefully we can.
Excellent. That sounds good. And if people want to follow me, Dr. Bob Gabay, at Dr. Bob Gabay on Twitter. So thanks so much.
I have been for a while. So
excellent. All right. Well, take care, everyone.
Thank you, Dr. Bob.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.